Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, here we go again down this COVID-19 highway. And then today on Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, we're going to come at it from a distinctly ethical position as we question the morality of some of these things. So we'll talk about what about Christians hoarding toilet paper and paper towels and soon to be chicken and beef and those, that kind of stuff. What about that? Should a Christian ever hoard those kinds of things? Is that right or wrong? Are you providing for your family or are you stealing from other people? How about just obeying the stay-at-home order at all? Whether you're talking about, hey, I can't work anymore, but I thought the Bible tells me if I don't provide for my family, I'm actually worse than an unbeliever. And what about a church? Should a church be submitting to the government? Romans 13. Should a church be submitting? Should we be submitting? Or what about scarce medical equipment, such as the ventilators? Now, this kind of crisis kind of came and went, but it was an issue in Italy. So do you help the younger people versus the older people, the people closer to the grave, move to the back of the line or perhaps the front of the line, depending on how you want to look at it? Should Christians protest against government economic policies? You've seen me out there protesting. I've been a part of those. But is there something wrong about that? Of course, let's talk about masks or no masks. If you're a Christian and you choose not to wear a mask out of your bad attitude, which apparently I have, then is that unloving towards your neighbor and you're risking other people's lives just because you don't feel like falling in line behind that particular suggestion, quote unquote, by the government? So is that a moral or ethical issue for a Christian? What about trying to protect people from serious illness and or death? Right now on Worldometers, their projections about 76,000. If you look at the CDC thing, by the way, since we're bringing that up and people, and I posted this as well, said, hey, look, the CDC just dropped their numbers by 30,000. What they're doing is they're lagging 2 weeks. So they dropped it back 2 weeks and said, okay, these are the numbers that we had solidly that we believe. And then we've got 2 weeks of numbers coming in. So for the CDC to then come back up to their number, which we were thinking this was last week, like 64,000, you'd actually have to see 30,000 actual verified deaths in 2 weeks. I don't think they're going to get there, but we're not going to deal with that today on Theology Thursday. We are going to look at what about protecting people physically, the health side of COVID-19 versus unemployment and everything else that goes with that. Because right now, let's just go with the numbers that we've been given, like Worldometers is doing this, pulling from the World Health Organization and the CDC. You got 76,000 deaths. We're just using the numbers just to get through the conversation, okay? But we have 34 million people. We added 3.1 million people in the last week. We've got 34 million unemployed in America in the last 5 weeks, which amounts to about 450 unemployed people for every death. So do you pull the trigger, so to speak, and say we're going to unemploy 450 people and everything else that goes with that so that we can save one life? Is that the ethical thing to do or is that unethical? Is that moral or is that immoral? Well, I'm actually not going to answer a single one of those questions today. I'm going to dump it all on my good friend, Dr. David Jones, here from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, one of my esteemed professors of ethics here, who helped me finally graduate last year after 427 years on the road. But David, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
It's good to be here, Steve. And, you know, I should say congratulations. This is the first time I've been in studio since you wrapped up that degree.
Is it really?
Last semester. And so praise the Lord for that, and
yes,
congratulations.
You get some amount of bling in heaven for that, I think. or maybe you'll get chastised. I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll wait and see what happens once we both come before the Lord. But it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in here. And there are a lot of issues. I mean, as this stuff all started to break, as a professor of ethics here at Southeastern Baptist, as this stuff all started to come to light back in February, were your ethical gears kind of turning the whole time as it was one issue after another after another?
Oh, yeah. You know, my email inbox and my phone, you know, the voicemails, you know, started coming in mid-February, and they're still coming in. And there's some great questions, you know, that Christians are asking, that our graduates are asking, pastors are asking. And you know, I think that, you know, maybe the only error I could point to overall is to not be asking these questions, right? And so it's really good to think through these issues that you've listed out, and you know, perhaps we won't agree on everything, perhaps even you and I or all Christians, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Hopefully with the Word of God, we can come to an acceptable conclusion.
Yeah, and so we're going to kind of take these things one after another as they have occurred. So we both had a list, and we're going to kind of go after these as they've occurred. And the first thing that started happening is nobody could buy toilet paper. So you can't buy toilet paper. You can't buy paper towels. Pretty soon, I mean, and I said this jokingly, but I don't mean it jokingly. Pretty soon, we're going to have issues with chicken and with beef because of processing plants. That's all going to happen in this very bizarre season and dark season that we're in. So Christians going out, should we be, hey, we need to get toilet paper and paper towels. We need to provide for my family. So I'm going to hoard a little bit here and get it while I can. How do we kind of tackle that from an ethical, moral perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. Certainly we could all say, you know, that we're using fewer sheets now, right?
It depends on whether you hoard it or not.
My five kids, I tell them, hey, just one sheet at a time, right? The question of is hoarding ever okay, or stockpiling perhaps is a word that some folks have used. I mean, this is really an Eighth Commandment stewardship question, right? And so really, what is good stewardship? And what path ought we to take as we consider, you know, the resources that are available to us? Well, you know,
Eighth Commandment, you're saying thou shalt not steal.
Thou shalt not steal. I mean, or you could kind of turn that around and say thou shalt steward well, right? And so, I think certainly we could say that if somebody is hoarding goods and they have a neighbor in need and they don't share with that neighbor in need, I mean, certainly that would be wrong, right?
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's, I mean, to see that, you know, the starving person on the street, to see the one, you know, that's unclothed, you know, the marginalized, the orphan, the widow. You know, in both Testaments, we're told, hey, minister to that person, right? And if I only have one meal and it's two of us that are hungry, then we'll split the meal and we'll eat together, right? And so certainly to hoard in a greedy way and to hoard with the idea that I'm going to be a self-provider and to not realize that God's the one who ultimately gives these things to all of us, that would be wrong. So does that mean it's wrong to, say, stockpile, you know, perhaps to, you know, buy a week's worth of toilet paper or hand sanitizer or chicken or whatever it might be if it's available to you? I would say, well, no, that actually could be very good stewardship. I mean, especially if you have several in your family that you're responsible to provide for, and the food or the toilet paper is available. I would say, well, that actually could be a mark of good stewardship. But you would never want to do so to someone else's detriment and never want to do so unwilling to share.
Yeah.
And so part of that may be what's your heart and what's behind the accumulation of goods.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, because you're sitting there going, okay, I got to balance myself. And also when you hoard, if you're stockpiling and you're hoarding, I'll go New Testament on you and ask you, are you really trusting the Lord in that? That's an Old and New Testament issue. Are you trusting the Lord or are you trusting in yourself? That's obviously a challenge as well. We'll be right back.
So what are we waiting for? A message in the sky.
Welcome back to Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. It's Theology Thursday here on the campus of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. I'm here with a good friend of mine and a professor of mine, one of the ethics professors here at Southeastern Baptist, Dr. David Jones, and he's been on the show many, many times before. And we've done some dark things together in the past. We've talked about suicide. We've talked about cremation. We've been down a lot of interesting roads over the years on Theology Thursday. And Dr. Jones gets in here every once in a while. We have several different professors here at Southeastern. If you're newer to the show, we do Theology Thursday. We always pull from that amazing base of knowledge and wisdom and biblical learning here at Southeastern, and then share that with all of you via the show every Thursday. So it's a great resource for all of us. We've been doing this for about, gosh, I think it'll be 5 years this fall. And by the way, you hear this level of teaching. This is beyond what you can get in just about any regular church setting in terms of Sunday school or small group, stuff like that. But you can also access a lot of this online. Actually, do you have one of the free classes online? I think you do.
I do, yeah. I actually have a class on the ethics of wealth and poverty. It's ethics of money, perhaps it's called. And it's a great free class that folks can get to through the seminary website.
And the easiest way to do that, actually, is through the webpage that the seminary set up for the radio show, which is sebts.edu/radio. And when you go there, you're going to land on a page. If you throw that up there, you probably already did that, Evan. Did you do that already? So that's on Facebook Live. You can see that. And there's a bunch of free classes you can take. There's some certificate classes you can take. You can actually start pursuing a degree with regular paid classes. But all the classes, like Dr. Jones was just talking about, take them at your own speed, your own leisure. It doesn't cost you anything. A lot of those do. And no tests and no quizzes, no papers, no
Amen.
Nothing.
Amen.
You just learn and just dine on that. But I'm telling you, You should check it out, especially with the extra time that we've had during this COVID-19 situation, which is what we're talking about, kind of the ethics of COVID-19, our morality and ethics versus the COVID-19 situation. But go check that out, sebts.edu/radio, and you can see all the things that you can access online. So we talked about, is it okay for believers to hoard and stockpile material resources? That was kind of the first thing to happen. And then we got these kind of stay-at-home orders. This is the second one we're going to tackle. This is kind of a church-state question. This is a Romans 13. Christians are supposed to obey the governing authorities. So when the governing authority says, stay home, we should stay home. What do we do with that?
Great question, Steve. You know, of course, now, if you had the time and could come over here and join us in the seminary or the college, we do have a course on both the bachelor's and master's level on the ethics of church and state. And in that course, you would get 15 weeks in depth on this question, right, Steve? But you know, here's the Cliff's Notes, I mean, on a church-state question. The shortcut is this, is that you always obey the governing authorities unless doing so is going to cause you to sin or keep you from righteousness. And so always obey unless it's going to cause you to sin or keep you from righteousness. And so that's just a shortcut, you know. But of course, it's incredibly more complex than that, right? Because every question, every example, every illustration, we can caveat it, and there's more than one moral norm in play, etc. But essentially, you know, I mean, when we're told to stay home, so stay-at-home orders, like, is that going to cause me personally to sin or keep me from righteousness just in and of itself? I think we would say initially no, that's I can do that, and that's not going to be problematic. You know, I still have ways to communicate, via social media and Zoom, and some of us can still work and all of that. And so in general, we would say no. But say the government said, hey, stay home always and forever and never assemble together and go to church, right?
Yeah, because that's another aspect where they're saying, okay, church gatherings, that's out. You can't gather, blah, 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 blah. And then people started saying, okay, hold on a second. The Bible says that we're not to neglect the gathering together of the saints, of the brotherhood.
Exactly.
So is that a case where we would say, okay, it's okay because the Bible tells me don't give up, don't forsake the gathering together of the saints, which sounds a lot like church to me on Saturday or Sunday.
Yes.
And the government says don't. So in this case, I'm just going to blow off the government.
Yeah, and so I mean, that's a great verse there in the book of Hebrews, right? And so we have this burden and this desire where we have to gather together as the people of God. We're told to do that. And so does that mean that we need to do it every day or every week or every month? Well, see, this is where Christians are going to perhaps have room for disagreements, right?
Yeah.
And so we would say, with good reason, since we don't know about this virus and how contagious it is and whatnot, okay, I understand that we'll stay home and we'll not assemble as the church, and we'll do that this Sunday and next, and maybe the one after that as we're learning more. And, I'm not being kept from righteousness. I'm not being caused to sin. But if this goes on for, 6 months, a year, 5 years, if you're in a country, say, like China, where brethren can't gather together unless it's in a state church, well, then we would say, I'm not going to stay home.
Yeah, we're going underground. We're disobeying that.
Exactly. And beyond that, we would actually say that that's not actually disobeying the governing authorities, because as Paul explains in Ephesians 6, as he's telling us about the fifth commandment, which tells us, that's the command that tells us to obey our authorities, right? He says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, right? Yeah. And so it's that idea that, if your parents tell you to go rob a convenience store, that there's no burden to obey them.
Because we need toilet paper.
Exactly, right? And so parents have no authority to instruct their children to sin. The government has no authority to instruct us personally sin. And so essentially, then to assemble, when we're told that we can never assemble, that's not disobeying authority, because the government doesn't have that authority. And so, again, a complex question, but Cliff's Notes, always obey, unless doing so will cause you to sin or keep you from righteousness. At what point are we at that it's going to actually keep me from righteousness? Is it after 2 months?
Yeah.
Is it after 2 weeks?
Well, one thing that happened immediately, though, and I wanted to talk about this. We'll move to this now, is when the government orders you to stay home, you're in a non-essential business, and now you can't work. And the scriptures are pretty clear that if a man doesn't, talking about a believer, if a man doesn't provide for his family, he's actually worse than an unbeliever.
Yes.
So I can come at that biblically. Also, I think that's a violation of the image of God in us, because he made us to work and to be productive. That's also a way that we help. God uses us to help provide for the needs of the earth and our fellow mankind. Now I got another couple of issues there. Plus, I've got a I've got a constitutional issue with I've been denied my ability to pursue my general welfare, and I don't even have due process, which is a Fifth Amendment issue. I've been mm-hmm. but biblically, I would say if the government's telling you you can't work, mm-hmm. I have a problem with that.
Yeah, and so you see, it's gotten complex already, hasn't it? Right. This is why I have job security, right? It's these questions, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. You and me both.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, you know, certainly, you know, I think, Steve, if memory serves me correct, I think we even did a show a few years back, you and I, maybe on work and on vocation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, as we would say, we have a biblical duty to work. God made us to work. He made us to labor. I mean, and that's why we find it so fulfilling, and ultimately why laying around all day is not actually fulfilling, right? Because we were designed to labor and function and create because we're made in God's image. And so, for the government to say you can't work ever again, that would be wrong. For them to say, okay, you need to stay home for a few weeks because of this unknown virus, we're still learning about it, all that, and you can't work for a few weeks, I would say, well then, okay, all right, I can make that
sacrifice.
Exactly.
But at some point.
At some point, that's where the rubber kind of meets the road,
right.
And where even good Christians will disagree, right? And so certainly if it gets to the point where I'm actually not able to provide for my family at all, the cupboard is bare, right? My children are starving. Well, at that point, certainly, we've gone too far,
yeah.
Right? So between where we could clearly identify it as being too far and where it's okay to do because it's not a matter of sin or righteousness, we would say, oh, well, then okay, but where is that point?
Yeah.
Again, room for disagreement, I think.
Yeah, room for disagreement, but if the government is causing you to be unable to provide for your family, I'm like, go back to work, defy those authorities, and do what you need to do to provide for your family, especially inside the family of faith, but do your actual family first. We're going to keep talking about that. A lot of other things to talk about. What do we do with ventilators? Not that that's an issue anymore. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Thursday we do with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, where the studio happens to be located. So we call it Theology Thursdays. Today my good friend, Dr. David Jones, a PhD, professor of Christian ethics, also the Associate Dean for Theological Studies here at Southeastern, sebts.edu/radio. We'll land you on a page where you can access all kinds of, a lot of free classes too here at the seminary, and just awesome content at a much higher level than you're used to being able to get, even at a good Sunday school class, because you have these PhD level professors. So it's really a great benefit, and make sure you check that out and get on that. You'll be blessed by every second you spend doing that. Today talking about, kind of, because we're both kind of ethics guys, kind of the confluence of what we're dealing with COVID-19 and the shutdowns and all the other stuff, and taking an ethical, moral view on that from a biblical perspective, of course. So we're kind of working our way through these issues. There was another one. This isn't quite the issue that it was, but it's still worth talking about from an ethical standpoint. And you brought this one up about allocating scarce medical equipment such as ventilators. We saw this in Italy,
mm-hmm.
and that was a serious conversation here in America. Okay, we've got 50 people that need ventilators. We only have 40 ventilators, so how do we pick who we give one to?
This
goes dark fast.
Oh, it does. And I tell you, I'm so thankful, Steve, that this has not yet become a major issue in most places of our country. It's popped up in a few hospitals, but for the most part, it's not an issue. I know folks are worried about a second wave and perhaps it becoming an issue. But yeah, say, for example, that you've got, maybe a 75-year-old man on a ventilator, and he's there, otherwise doing okay. And into the ER comes a 23-year-old gal, who also needs a ventilator, right? Well, what kind of got my attention is a lot of the folks out there in the secular arena were saying, well, what you would do is you would take the ventilator from him and give it to her. And the rationale for that is that statistically, she has far more years left, right? And I wanted to just scream and say, no, that's terrible. That's what's called utilitarianism or consequentialism. And with that approach,
just grab a calculator, and that determines value.
Exactly. And so what that view does is essentially it equates the value of life with longevity of life. And what we want to say as believers is say, well, no, we believe that life is valuable because it's life, and that the sanctity of human life, it's contingent upon being made in God's image. So even the person who is suffering and has a relatively short time left, there's still value to their life because they're made in God's image. And so we don't want to equate via some utilitarian calculus the worth of someone's life with the projected longevity of it. And so I would say, I mean, God forbid that you were in that type of scenario, that no, you would not take it from him and give it to her. Now, you would grieve if she needed a ventilator,
right,
that
right.
We're living in a fallen world and there's not one for her. But that's just the result of the fall, right? And there's no justification, no basis in that scenario, in a vacuum at least, that would give us rationale to take it from him and give it to her. And what was concerning to me is that in a secular arena, you were having many folks who were reaching that conclusion via that moral analysis.
Yeah,
and I would say, no, that's incorrect.
Yeah, and then there's, I don't know if it was the CDC, I don't know if it's federal government, NIH, I don't remember who did this, but somebody, and maybe it was at state level, came up with actually a program. They had four different stages of life. And then depending on where you fall in that stage of life, because we, and it was so funny because these are all pro-abort people talking about the value of life. And if you haven't been able to experience all four stages, then we would prefer that younger person who's got those three stages ahead of them versus the older person who's already lived through three stages and they're in the fourth stage. These are all pro-aborts talking about the value of human life. But they're then doing – that's a utilitarian calculation again. If you have 50 years left, odds are you're more valuable than the person that only has five. So we'll pull the ventilator off the old man and give it to the young girl. So in that case, going back to the scenario you described, that's kind of – it's like as they come in, help them. And in the end, if you can't help them, God help us all. But yeah, that's the way you do it.
And you grieve because of that, right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, we should take a second, Steve, and just, you know, express our appreciation for those folks on the front lines.
Sure.
Right? The nurses, the doctors.
We're the front. Now this is, all right, I'm going.
I'm using the terminology.
Where
front line.
The front line exists, I'm all for it. Because there's all kinds of, now, and I grieve for all the doctors and nurses and ER people who are losing their jobs and losing their hours and losing their income because we bulked this whole system up. We brought an atom bomb to a knife fight, and now we've got hospitals struggling around the country. So
yeah.
In some ways, I'll say, okay, they're heroes because they're victims.
Yeah.
But there's actually other healthcare people that are the heroes that you're describing in that context.
Yeah,
I'm totally with you.
Yeah, those folks that are out there and are
absolutely,
you know, being exposed to to harm.
And okay, so, let's talk about the protests, because this is another thing. We're kind of going through this chronologically. Then the protests started to show up about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. So is that all right for a Christian? So we're disobeying the stay-at-home order.
Mm-hmm.
We're calling on the U.S. Constitution, which gives me the right to go after the government for a redress of my grievances. It gives me the right to assemble, which I can also use to talk about the church gathering thing. But as a Christian, Romans 13 and other people saying, okay, you're going out in public, you're violating the government, you're supposed to submit to the government, and you're going out there just because of economic policies, which means you're a materialist.
Yeah, so,
no, right? That's how it gets played.
We kinda,
believe me, I've had all that stuff thrown at me.
I know, as you've been down there, right? We can kind of go back to that little Cliff's Notes I gave earlier, right? Always submit, always obey, unless it's going to cause you to sin or keep you from righteousness, right? Now, praise God that we live in a country where we have the freedom to assemble and protest. And so if I disagree with a government policy that maybe it's not causing me to sin or keeping me from righteousness, maybe it is, I have that right in our country to peacefully protest. I would say, no, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Now, of course, we've all seen on the news, right? I mean, folks that have taken it too far.
Sure, absolutely.
And have started to sin in their protest by destroying property, throwing bricks through windows, attacking law officers, that type of thing. We'd say, well, no, that's wrong in and of itself, always, even not at a protest. And so is protesting itself okay? I would say yes, right? Whether or not the policy that we're protesting is right or wrong, that's actually not relevant. It's because we have the right to protest in our country, and our Constitution affords us that right.
And that's where it's important to understand Paul's deal. Because Paul at one point goes, spoiler alert, I'm a Roman citizen. He knew his rights and he took advantage of his rights.
Yes.
And that's when they stopped the bludgeoning and the beating. And you could just imagine all the centurions going, oh, man. Okay, everybody knock it off. This guy's a Roman citizen. He's got rights.
Yep.
Paul knew his rights.
Mm-hmm.
He took advantage of his rights.
Yes. And nothing wrong with that. But when we cross the line from peaceful protest to a violent protest.
Right, right.
Well, that's where...
Then you're sinning.
Then you're sinning, and we ought not to do that.
Here is another one. We'll really get into the nasty stuff now, okay? What you had this one. What moral considerations are in play as we consider ending the quarantine? I'm going to go a little more specific to the leper-non-leper situation of wearing a mask or not wearing a mask. and then I put... fairly obnoxious meme up about a week ago. I really upset some fellow Christians with it because they didn't like the attitude. I was mocking kind of what I think is the overreach of the government and the use of a lot of fear tactics. But people will make the case, hey, if you're a Christian, you should wear a mask, whether you believe it helps you or not. You'll keep other people from getting sick. And if you don't wear one, you're selfish and you don't care about other people. And I think this is part of the coming out of the quote-unquote stay-at-home orders is the whole mask, no mask, and loving your neighbor. So where do you go with that one?
You know, well, I mean, those pieces that you've just articulated, Steve, you know, are kind of the pieces that we need to sort of think through. And, you know, the love of neighbor is so, so very important. And so you know, is wearing a mask in public, I mean, is that going to cause me to sin or keep me from righteousness? I would say usually, but probably not, right? And so when I go out in public in stores, I've been wearing a mask for the past few weeks, right? And of course, you know, that way you kind of avoid the dirty looks as well from everyone else, you know?
Which we know a person that chooses to wear a mask mostly because they didn't want to bring attention to themselves. They didn't like those dirty looks.
Yes,
now,
sure.
You could imagine what my answer is on that one.
I could.
Bring it on.
Yeah, I know.
But you want to have a conversation? I'll do it right here in the meat and poultry aisle if there are any meat and poultry left.
But for those of us, you know, that are less extroverted, Steve, right?
Yes, you know, thank you. That was very kind of you. Yes.
Sometimes we might do so just to avoid those looks. But
yes.
And so, I mean, is that a valid argument, you know, that you should wear a mask, right? I mean, personally, because you're trying to avoid a confrontation, or externally because, you know, perhaps you are a carrier of the virus, and because of neighbor love, and because there are some folks that might be more likely to catch the virus and die from it in the aisle, sure, great. I'd say that's totally fine, right? And that ought to, that can motivate us
sure.
to do so. I think the part that causes us to bristle is when you've got, I think your term earlier was government overreach, you know, where there is this mandate to do it just because I said do it. Right?
Well, 4 weeks ago, the masking was not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And in most parts of the country, you saw the curve start to flatten
sure.
without the masks. You've never seen Fauci. Mm-hmm. In one Fauci or Birx or Trump, for that matter, in one single setting with that whole task force, non-social distance, none of them wearing masks. And the science on masks is disputed. Some people say it's actually bad for you, your mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. So it's not black and white to me. Mm-hmm. Plus, part of it is I'm concerned about government overreach.
Mm-hmm.
And then my flesh side is, because I'm the last of four kids and I have red hair, you tell me that I should go sit in that corner. And my flesh is going to go in the opposite corner just because I'm going to establish myself, right?
Yeah, and so I guess I could probably say it like this, Steve. I don't think it's inherently wrong, but I think it could have been articulated better as it was rolled out to us.
Yeah, good point. How do you articulate it? How do you talk about it? That matters as well, whether you do it or not. Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Who is this SOB? Yeah, I just said that. Now, if you're a good Christian, right now you're thinking, well, you're thinking one of two things. This almost sounds like a Clint Eastwood moment. I know what you're thinking. Did he fire five shots, six shots, or only five? Here's what the deal is. Some of you are going, Steve, why would you say that? Some of you are going, I wonder what that means. It means exactly what you think it means. Does that make you a sinner? Because you already know what it means. That's a separate issue. The whole point of this, I was with a friend of mine, brilliant, happens to be a seminarian level type thinker. And another friend of mine who's on my board was like, Steve, are you listening to some of these most popular podcasts out here in America? Because our kids are listening to them. This is a 12 to 35 demo. Okay, 12-year-olds to 35-year-olds are listening to these podcasts. There's 750,000 podcasts out there. There's 25 podcasts, 30 podcasts in America that make a huge splash. Your kids, your grandkids are listening to them, and you don't have a clue what's going on. And I didn't. So I started listening, and I'm like, holy cow, there's some really bad stuff here. Worldview stuff, political stuff, broken stuff, and there's no Christian response. There's no winsome Christian response. And those people, by the way, are not coming to church, and they're not listening to this show, and they're not listening to Christian podcasts. They're listening to all this other stuff. So the thought came up, what if we created a podcast that I'll go listen to these podcasts, some of the most popular podcasts out there on a weekly or biweekly basis, and then offer a Christian response and turn around and market it to their audiences. Tag their hosts, tag the shows, tag their search engine optimization words, just basically overlay it all. We're going to drive our conservative Christian theologically and politically, obviously, car right into their oncoming traffic. But to try to do that in a way that's somewhat winsome, so I tell them in the opening, hey, my name's Steve Noble, uber conservative, Bible thumping, Southern Baptist talk radio show host. And I am that SOB. Right? And then the ones that's going to take on some of the most popular podcasts in America when they're wrong, which is often, but I'm willing to admit it when they're right, which doesn't happen as often, but I'll admit it. And let's at least have a conversation. So that was the birthplace of it. We're talking to David Jones here today, and we're going to get back into the ethics and morality of dealing with COVID-19. But since this is dropping and starting on Monday, I just wanted to give you a heads up. I'll talk about it then. You'll hear me talk about it a lot. Then I'm having lunch with this other gentleman, and he's like, golly, well, he loves the idea. Everybody loves the idea. And then how do you think they're going to respond? Mm. If we can actually get the attention of these audiences out there, how do you think they're going to respond? And I said, I think they're going to be upset. They're going to be offended. And they might be like, who is this SOB anyway? And he goes, that should be the name of the podcast. Now people go, oh, that's not Christ-like of you. You can't believe you would do that. Listen, to be quite blunt, this podcast, I hope you listen to it. I think you'll learn from it. It'll help you learn how to engage this stuff that's out there. But I'm not making it for you. We're trying to get the attention of the people that have no interest in coming to church. So I have to swerve into their lane a little bit. So I'll be a little more aggressive in the way I communicate. I'm not going to be dropping F-bombs. But when you listen to these podcasts, if they drop an F-bomb in their podcasts, like one of them's Pod Save America, these are four speech writers for Obama, uber, uber liberal, godless, and they have a hugely successful podcast. And their language is terrible. And when I play clips inside of our podcast and then respond to those clips, you're going to hear it as they are, because that's reality. That's what's happening out there. And God willing, we'll be able to get the attention of some of these folks. The main goal is to get them over to the website, whoisssob.com. Don't go there yet because it's not live till Monday. And then to try to engage them in a conversation and then share the gospel with them. Mm. That's the ultimate point. But they're not listening to us, so I got to get into them. I have to drive our car into their traffic. That's the whole point of that. I'll talk about it more later. Anyway, what do you think of that?
Let me ask you, Steve.
Yes, please.
How many episodes are you planning on doing a week on that?
Well, we have an introductory episode that's going to drop on Monday, and then I've got four in the can. They're anywhere from 35 minutes to an hour long. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start this summer by doing at least two a month. Mm-hmm. I hope to be able to get to do one a week.
Nice.
But it
nice.
Takes me about 10 hours to do one. Besides listening to these podcasts and formulating, I got to pull out the clips I want to use, and then I pretty much record it live. I can do that because I've been doing radio such a long time. But
and this will be available on
every podcast platform out there. Yeah, and so the marketing is aggressive, as you can imagine. It's all in red. Who is this SOB? But we're doing it for a gospel purpose. So if you want to engage me about it, go ahead. That's fine. Okay, so we were talking about the mask and the no mask. We talked about that. Let's talk. This one's difficult. I've struggled with this one myself. We're talking about the ethics and morality of dealing with some of these things from COVID-19. Financial hardships versus health. Mm. So right now, by most counts, and I'm not going to get into the veracity of this, let's just use the one that's out there, like Worldometers takes World Health Organization, CDC, 76,000 deaths. Now, don't lose your junk out there because you disagree with that number. I disagree with that number, but this is for the sake of the argument. 76,000 dead because of COVID-19 in America. We have 34 million now unemployed. So we've unemployed 450 people for every death.
Mm. Mm.
So do we, the utilitarian, what do we do with that?
Mm.
Should we, it's your decision, Dr. Jones, out there at Southeastern Baptist. In order to save a Mr. Johnson up here in New York, you have to unemploy 450 of your fellow North Carolinians and take their income away for a certain period of time, 6 months, a year, whatever it is.
Mm.
What do we do with that?
Yeah, so we're back at that whole neighbor love question,
yes.
Right? And this is where, again, it gets difficult because we all want to affirm and say, yes, I mean, neighbor love is a valid principle, and I should be willing to even lay down my life, you know, for the sake of my neighbor, right? And this is the second greatest commandment, Matthew 22, as Christ teaches us. And so we want to affirm that. And this is the proper motivation, as we were saying before the break, as to why we would agree to stay home, right? It's because, okay, we'll love neighbor, and I don't want those who are high-risk categories, you know, to catch this and die. And so because I love them, I'm willing to do this. But then we have to start factoring in the other ingredients in the moral equation. Well, if doing so is going to cause, you know, 450 of us to lose our jobs permanently and not be able then to provide for our families, well, how is that a show of neighbor love? Right, I mean, it may be neighbor love for the individual who is susceptible to catching the virus and dying, but it's not for all the children of all those families that aren't being provided for. And so how do we decide what's best? Well, I think part of what's going on currently with the attempt to sort of reopen some states and things, I think a part of that is folks kind of thinking through this very question and saying, okay, well, this was a right course of action, and we wouldn't do it any differently if we could redo it, because we didn't know and how contagious is this virus and all the questions that were being asked. Yeah, but now we know. And so there may be a way that, hey, we can protect the lives of those who are most vulnerable, and most of us or some of us still go back to work. And so even as you and I were talking, Steve, before the show started, I mean, the stats on like the percentages of folks who have passed away from the virus that are in care homes is really
skyrocketing.
It's staggering, right? And so certainly we need to do all we can to protect those communities, right? And the person that didn't want to protect those particular communities, that's certainly a moral error, right?
Yeah.
But maybe we can protect those communities and still work in certain contexts, right? And so
because it's not either or.
Yes.
It's both and.
What's the best manifestation of the moral norm of showing neighbor love? That's the question. And that's where good Christians disagree. But certainly we can point out the errors. Coming up with the exact right conclusion that's going to make everyone happy, that's where it gets difficult.
Yeah, it gets really difficult. And I think I've struggled with this. I mentioned this earlier, that oftentimes I've struggled with showing charity towards people that I know are believers who disagree.
Mm.
And right now, it's the same thing that happened, unfortunately, with the Trump presidency in 2016. That was very divisive in certain parts of the body of Christ. And I'm not getting into whether that was warranted or not. Okay, it just was. And now we see this again, whether it's government overreach, staying at home, not going to work, protesting, wearing the mask, not wearing the mask. It's very difficult days. There's a lot of confusion. There's lack of information. There's misinformation. There's disinformation. So I'm gonna sidestep the ethical side a little bit for a second and say, should we be looking at this through kind of end times, birth pains? I asked Steve Dace, who's a brilliant commentator. He's on the Blaze Network, been on radio for years, one of the smartest political commentators I've ever known. And I said, what do you think of that, about this from an eschatological standpoint, from an end time standpoint? He goes, well, if these aren't actually birth pains, then this is sure a good dry run for the man of lawlessness. and because there's so much confusion, and it's worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to me, I have to go, okay, there's all kinds of things going on in the natural realm and politics and economy and jobs and all of that. But there seems to be a supernatural element here that is very obvious, I think.
And I think that we have to be aware of that. Now, can we nail that down to a particular eschatology and know for sure and let that guide all of our decisions? Well, no. But we can certainly be aware of the fact that that we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. It's actually principalities and spiritual forces. And so that's just another way that we're informed and can go into our decision-making process and be aware of that as we weigh in on these questions that really are being asked by everyone today.
Yeah, and I think that's neighbor love and submitting to the governing authorities, I think, are the two biggest things that are going on here. And I think it should challenge us if we're struggling to understand what we should do. This is a good time to kind of double down and get back into the scriptures and sharpen your own sword, so to speak. And can you really think well biblically? Politically, okay, fine. Financially, okay, that's all part of having a good biblical worldview. But is your biblical worldview robust enough that you can even have these conversations?
And that's the challenge, Steve.
And that's the challenge, which is why it's all incumbent upon us to do something about that. And God's given us this season, but things have slowed down. The question is, what are we doing with the season that he's allowed to have happen? And that's another stewardship issue as well. Dr. Jones, always great to have you in here. Thank you so much for your time and for braving the warnings.
It's great to be here.
Sit in the same room with me because we're less than 6 feet apart.
Don't tell anyone.
Shh, quiet. Don't tell anybody I said that. Anyway, thanks for being here. It's great seeing you. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. Tomorrow we'll be talking to Bishop Wooden, my slightly older brother from another mother. And we're going to be talking, I think, to Congressman Mike Johnson as well. So it'll be a big time tomorrow. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.